You're listening to KGNU, Community Radio for Denver and Boulder. I'm Paul Caroli. In the studio with me today is Manuel Ramos. He is the former director of advocacy at Colorado Legal Services and the author of several crime fiction novels that draw on his career working with the law. His work has won widespread acclaim, including two Colorado Book Awards. Today, we'll be discussing his newest book, My Bad, A Mile High Noir, which is the sequel to Desperado, his first novel featuring investigator Gus Corral. Manuel, welcome to the studio today.
Well, hi, Paul. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, in preparing for this interview, I read a little bit about you, and it seems that you've earned this title, the Godfather of Chicano Noir. What does that title mean to you, Manuel?
I don't know how seriously we want to take that title, but I do write fiction that I like to call Chicano Noir. It's a variation on traditional noir literature, so any of your listeners who know what that term means will understand when I say that the stories are usually dark, protagonist is not an angel, there aren't always happy endings, the atmosphere and tone are very important to the setting. You know, it's derivative of film noir, or the old black and white tough guy movies that we are familiar with from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. But the literature itself is a separate kind of format and tradition. And what I do is, I respect that tradition, but because I'm a Chicano and I'm willing to change things up, you know, I've turned it a little bit on its head and come up with what I call Chicano Noir.
Now, the other part, Chicano, and especially for listeners who might not be familiar with that term, what does that mean in Denver in 2016?
You know, Chicano is a term that was coined by political activists back in the 60s, although it's older than that, actually. It's older than the 1960s, but it came into its own in the 60s. And the movement itself was a civil rights movement nationwide that started with farm workers' rights, Cesar Chavez, but also branched out into land rights with Reyes Lopez Tijerina and others. All those kinds of things that are important to Mexican Americans. Chicano, Chicana basically means a Mexican American born and raised in the United States. Traditionally, that's what it means. But because we're a people that's always changing and moving forward, it, you know, probably has some ramifications now that are a little bit different. Today, you know, I think myself, I'm not so hung up on labels that I need to be really precise about what it means, but I am a Chicano writer. I've written books about Chicano people and the Chicano community, and so that's why it's important to me today. There are still issues that political and sociological and cultural issues that are being fought, from gentrification to voting to immigration, still today, including education. So the struggles itself haven't ended. They're just at a different level now, I think.
Now, you mentioned gentrification, and that brings us directly to the backdrop of these novels, and that's the setting, Denver's North Side, or the Highlands, as its newer, largely affluent white residents call it. It's a rapidly gentrifying area. And now, how does that make it an effective setting for noir in particular?
Yeah, I used what's happening in the neighborhood where I live up on the north side, where I've lived now for more than 30 years. I used the changes that are going on there as a backdrop for Desperado, which was published a couple of years ago now, and featured Gus Corral, a guy who was born and raised in the north side, a guy of the streets, somebody who knew what the history of that neighborhood was and now has to cope with the drastic changes. So what's going on in the neighborhood is pretty obvious to anybody who drives through there. Huge changes in the population, in the demographics, in the economics. Older residents, less affluent residents are being driven out because they can't afford to stay. The culture itself has changed. What used to be a very diverse and active neighborhood has now become not so diverse and pretty homogeneous, actually. So that's a background for conflict, for human drama. And for a writer, you know, it just makes perfect sense that I write about a neighborhood that I'm familiar with, and there is conflict that's inherent in that neighborhood.
The plot in My Bad covers a lot more ground than its predecessor. The story unfolds as Gus Corral and attorney Luis Montez crisscross Denver and interact with a diverse cast of colorful characters. At the same time, it's just as rooted in the culture of the North Side as Desperado, the previous Mile High Noir. And in that book, your characters, I felt like there was a much more varied and palpable anxiety over the gentrification and change, and that was toned down more in My Bad. Does that reflect your own coming to terms with change in the neighborhood?
Well, I don't know if I've come to terms with it. Change is inevitable, and change is going to happen no matter where we live or what we're talking about. That's just the way life is. And some change is good, some change is bad. I think if the tone has changed a bit in My Bad, it's simply that I'm not telling the same story that I told in Desperado. You know, I don't want to keep telling the same story over again. So there is some resistance to the changes in My Bad, but there's also some, at least on the part of my characters, Gus and Louis Montez, the attorney, there's some recognition that there are certain things that are going to happen, and there's not a lot that they can do about it as individuals. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what the author stands for, but you know, we got to separate the art from the artist, man.
So let's talk about the artist. What, you're a longtime resident of the neighborhood. What are some important changes that you felt?
The recent changes?
Yeah, specific things that meant something to you.
What I don't like are people who move into a neighborhood who have no respect for the neighborhood's history or culture, and don't want to find out about it. You know, newcomers to a neighborhood who think they have suddenly discovered the place and that it is now starting to exist as something important. You know, the North Side has always been important. A simple thing like what the neighborhood is called reflects, I believe, that attitude. I mean, if the North Side has been called North Side by residents for decades, and then the newcomers start to call it Highlands or Lohi, or hi-fi or wi-fi or whatever they want to call it, to me it just shows a bit of a lack of respect for what the community has been. You know, I was at a community meeting last night where the topic was gentrification and the changes, and you know, there are certainly some good things that come about because of change, but if people are being forced out or they can no longer live there or the culture or the history of the neighborhoods are being changed, or the attitudes are not what they used to be, if diversity is being lost, then those are negatives, as I see it.
This new Mile High Noir is told from the perspective of two of your old characters, Gus Corral and Louis Montez, as they solve a mystery together. Can you tell us a bit about who Gus Corral and Louis Montez are?
Sure, sure. Yeah, Louis Montez, it was my first character. I wrote five novels where he was the protagonist. The first one that came out with Louis was called The Ballad of Rocky Ruiz. And Louis actually started in a short story, and it was my first published work. It was called White Devils and Cockroaches, and it came out in Westward in a fiction contest that local newspaper magazine was running back in the 80s, and it was published as part of that contest, that short story. And it was about a burned-out Chicano attorney, midlife crisis, reflecting on his past, reflecting on what he had done with his life. I'd like to say that, you know, I happened to write it at the same time that I was a little burned out on being a Chicano attorney, and so this idea came to me to write a story about it. So Louis came out of that short story, and I did five books that trace really about 10 years in Louis's life, from the midlife attorney to towards the end of his career when he started to think about retiring. And I thought that I had done all I was going to do with Louis, so I went on to other writing projects and published other kinds of books. But, you know, in the latest series with Gus Corral, who's the guy who was born and raised in the North Side and first appeared also in a short story, Gus and Louis intersect, they came together in Desperado. Luis actually represented Gus because of what happened in the book. So it seemed to me, again, kind of organic that Louis and Gus would end up together telling their story in My Bad. So the point of view in each chapter changes from Louis to Gus and back to Louis then to Gus, which was kind of a challenge for me as a writer. But I wanted to try to have two perspectives on what was happening, what the action was that was going on. And each of those two guys are facing different issues in their life as the story unfolds. Louis is actually going to retire and is trying to come to grips with what that really means. And Gus is still struggling to make it and figure out what he's going to do with his life now that he was in prison for a while and now he's come out. So he's working for Montez, the attorney, as his investigator. That's how they get snatched up in the storyline.
So was it interesting or fun to see these old characters from each other's perspective?
Oh, yeah, that was, you know, it's important that a writer really understand and know his characters or her characters, and this exercise in this novel helped me to understand Luis Montez a lot better. You know, I thought I had written everything I could about him in the early five books, but I realized, you know, there was still more to tell about this guy. There was still some wrapping up that needed to be done. And so Louis, looking at Gus, has the perspective of years of experience and older. He's, you know, he's been hurt and damaged himself. And if you read the earlier books, you can see some of the hassles he went through. So he's able to reflect on what Gus is going through from that perspective. And meanwhile, Gus is sometimes trying to figure out exactly where Luis is coming from and if maybe Luis isn't lost in the past and is he really dealing with what's going on today. But at the end, you know, they respect each other. They work with each other quite well. And they have a relationship that kind of blossoms.
Let's focus on Gus Corral for a second. This excerpt comes from early on in the book.
Okay, well, the setup here is that this is an early case that after Gus has gone to work for Luis. And he's Luis has asked Gus to check out a guy named Valdez, who's involved with their client. So that's where this picks up. The rental was a blue and white toy, almost too small for me. But Luis told me the rates were cheap, and I could park it almost anywhere without worrying about meters, tickets, or gas. As I drove south on always busy I-25 from the north side to the Westwood neighborhood, I felt exposed, vulnerable, silly. The car was smaller than Corrine's Kia. If any other car or truck hit me, my ride would crumble into a tiny ball of smashed metal and plastic, with me jellied in the middle of the ball. I knew how I looked to all the drivers who passed me, some honking their horns even though I was in the slow lane. In the tiny car, I came off as a brown-skinned, muscle-bound hulk, pressed up against the steering wheel of a car that had no business carrying me. Westwood was one of the few remaining neighborhoods in the Denver city limits where the word barrio still fit. Working families who'd been residents for decades, damaged but proud houses and small shops that dealt in everything from motorcycle repairs to marijuana cookies, all mixed together in a crooked rectangle bordered by Alameda, Mississippi, Federal, and Sheridan. Tattoo artists collected books for neighborhood kids. Mexican taquerias sprung up and died like mushrooms, while the public art of Chicano artist Carlos Frescas welcomed visitors to the community at Morrison Road, the diagonal street that cut through the heart of Westwood. I drove past the address. Valdez lived in a gray, aging house that must have had all of four rooms. The dirt yard had no plant life, no life period. I parked the car several blocks from his house, locked it up, and electronically closed the account. I walked back to Valdez's house. The lights were on, but I didn't see anyone. I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do or what Montez expected from me. He'd simply said, "Watch him." I stood in darkness under a tall pine tree with rough branches and hoped that I would stay awake. I made myself as comfortable as possible. I bent my knees and squeezed into the darkness of the tree. From where I stood, I could see the front and side door and a large, dirty picture window covered with dark blinds or curtains. The night was filled with throbbing noise, thumping bass rhythms mixed with barking dogs, ambulance sirens, and hollering children. Screen doors slammed, water flowed along the curb, and traffic moved on the major streets in a constant hum. I watched and waited and managed to stay awake until midnight, but I drifted in and out of awareness, and I must have dozed off because I jerked against the tree when I heard a distant car alarm. A pickup truck painted primer gray sat on the gravel driveway that ran along the side of the house. It looked like a late 1970s Ford. The lights were still on in the house, but there was no movement, no sign of any life. I wrote down the New Mexico license plate number hanging on the back of the pickup. I thought I could check that out back at the office, and then Montez could decide how he wanted to use the information, if it mattered at all. I hadn't expected much, so even a license plate number struck me as worthwhile. I turned to walk to the rental car when headlights lit up my side of the street, and I jumped back in the shadows. A dark, late-model Camry pulled to a stop in front of the house. For almost 5 minutes, nothing happened. The driver's door opened and a woman stepped out. I couldn't see her face because of the scarf wrapped around her head. She carried a large handbag. She rushed to the side door and tapped on the cracked wood. Light from the house surrounded her when the door opened. A man grabbed her arm and pulled her inside. The door slammed shut. I walked around the tree and looked for a way that I could approach the house without being seen. Such a route did not exist. I stood where I was and waited. 15 minutes. The side door opened abruptly. The woman emerged, wrapping the scarf across her forehead. She ran out of the house, looked over her shoulder, then jumped in her car. She sped away almost immediately. 2 minutes. A tall man wearing a dark hoodie slipped out of the house and climbed in the pickup truck. He backed out of the yard and drove down the street in the opposite direction from the woman. The lights in the house remained on. I looked up and down the street. I saw no one, not a kid on a bike or an old-timer out for a walk. It was late, I reminded myself. I ran across the street and peered in through the side door window. A man lay on the kitchen floor. He looked unconscious or dead. Then I saw the blood seeping out of a gaping wound on his right temple. So there you are.
Yeah, so that definitely sets up some of the mystery of the novel. But it also, what I like about early on in that excerpt was that it brings up one of the more comical themes of the book, and that's Gus Corral's inability to find cars that are comfortable for him to drive.
Yeah, he has an issue with that. Huh?
I really appreciated that. Does that reflect a greater displacement he feels in his environment?
You can read that into it, I guess, if that's you want.
I certainly did. Anyway, you are listening to KGNU Denver and Boulder Community Radio. I'm Paul Caroli, and in the studio with me today is acclaimed Denver author Manuel Ramos. We're talking about his new novel, My Bad, A Mile High Noir, which came out in September from Arte Publico Press. Attorney Luis Montez was a common feature in many of your earlier novels, and he returns in My Bad to work with Gus Corral on an entirely new mystery. But time has passed for him too, as we've discussed, and Montez is reaching the end of his career. Was it difficult to find his voice again after years away from him?
You know, that's an interesting question. It took some work. It did. You know, I reintroduced Luis in Desperado, but that was kind of brief, and it was towards the end of the novel. And basically, Luis did his lawyer thing, and that was it. But, you know, I went back and read some of the earlier Luis stuff, had to figure out what would happen if, you know, we're talking now a few years later, and where would Luis be? So it's a question of the craft, you know, of the process of creating a piece of written art, to go back and dig up that character and revitalize him and not do anything mechanical with what I'm trying to do with him, but also try to remain true to his character. So it was work, but writing for me is work. It hasn't gotten easier over the years in the sense that it just sort of flows from the pen. I know what I got to do. You know, I understand much clearer the discipline necessary to do it and the mode I have to get into to produce a novel. But the actual creation of the words and the sentences is still as difficult as ever.
What keeps you coming back to Luis Montes?
I kind of grew up with Luis myself. So he's a character that, I mean, I made my bones as a writer with Luis Montes, so I appreciate that. I just felt I needed to finish his circle, finish the circle of his story, which I thought I had done, but there was one more piece that was left.
All right, we've got one more short excerpt. Now, this one comes from around the middle of the book. Manuel, do you want to prepare this one?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, Louis has gotten on in the years, and he's actually preparing to formally retire from the practice of law. And so one night he's working late at the office, and what he's doing is letters to his clients advising them that he's closing his practice and he's closing out their cases if they're really finished, or what they can do to continue to get legal help. And he's letting them know basically that you know, this is it for him with his practice. So Louis being Louis, he starts to think about what he's doing and what the consequences are. Montes has always done this. You know, he starts thinking in a very noir fashion about the dark side of whatever his decisions have been. So we'll take it from there. This is Montes thinking to himself. The idealistic reasons I had for becoming an attorney rolled over me like the marijuana cloud at the annual 420 rally, and for a brief second I worried that I'd never succeeded at my own ambition. I'd wanted to be the Chicano attorney of and for the people, the fast-talking, clever abogado who could go mano a mano with the best legal minds in the state, but who never forgot his roots in the housing projects of Denver's West Side. I'd wanted to create change for the better. But not much has really changed, I muttered. I was slipping into reminiscences that had nowhere to go except regret. My imagination left me, and the letters turned into rote and depressing exercises. I paused and surveyed my office. 40 years was a long time for anything. Now what? The wave of nostalgia felt colder than the gusts of icy wind that cracked against the office windows. Louis cracks me up sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What makes you laugh this time?
Well, I mean, he takes himself so seriously, you know.
He thinks in those metaphors?
I guess, yeah.
Now, in some ways, I imagine Montes's experience, as illustrated in this passage, must mirror yours. When you retired from the Colorado Legal Services 2 years ago, did you have some of these same thoughts? And how did it feel for you to retire from a life in activism and the law?
Well, I did have the exact same thoughts. But it was a transition, obviously. It was a big change. And retiring was difficult, making the decision. You know, I enjoyed the work I was doing at Legal Services. I enjoyed the people I worked with. I have a lot of respect for the people who work for legal aid, for Colorado Legal Services. It's a very hard job, difficult job, stressful. And the people who work there and stay there for years are committed to the mission of the program. So that was hard to leave. And, you know, helping clients and helping fellow staff resolve problems with clients and their cases can be very gratifying, very satisfying. But, you know, there's a lot of good talent in that program. It's in very good hands, and I had no doubts about that, of course, you know, that it's continuing vitality. I just had to face up to the fact that I was changing my life and to deal with it. And that's similar to where Louis is at, knowing you got to step aside and do something else with your life. But I think a lot of people who retire go through that. And now I'm enjoying it completely. I mean, I'm having a good time. So I can look back and appreciate what I did with my legal career and feel gratified about that, and now look forward to other things I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. What about in terms of broader change? Did you feel like, in his words, did you feel like you created change for the better?
Well, I don't know if I'm the one to judge that. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of things over my life. I'm 68 years old now, so I can say this about activism in college up at Colorado State University. You know, I just attended an anniversary there of the Multicultural Student Centers, El Centro, and the Black and African American Cultural Centers. And they're celebrating 40 years in existence of helping students of color on that campus. And I thought that was great. You know, that's really something to celebrate. And I'm proud to say that I was involved with students before that in developing a precursor program for students on that campus that eventually evolved into those multicultural centers. So, you know, that's something. And I was on hand with a lot of other students when that was going on, and the recent recognition was very satisfying.
In addition to writing novels and short stories, Manuel Ramos is also a co-founder and contributor to La Bloga, an online magazine on Latino literature and culture. Can you tell us about the site?
Yeah, it's called La Bloga, and you can find it at labloga.blogspot.com, I think. We created it 12 years ago. Rudy Garcia is another writer here in Denver, and myself, we used to talk about putting something on the net that would reflect the ongoing changes and new voices and older voices too of Chicano literature. And one day we were challenged by another friend that why didn't we just do it? So we did it. You know, Rudy and I opened it up, and we started gathering contributors. And so today we have a dozen contributors. Every day there's something new on the site that deals with Latino or Latina culture. We talk about books quite a bit. We do interviews. We have reviews. We have announcements. But we also talk about music. We talk about food, health issues, you name it, and it's probably appeared on La Bloga one time or another.
I was reading some of your recent posts earlier today, Manuel, and I noticed you seem to be interested in highlighting young, talented writers. And I want to know, what kind of writing attracts your attention these days?
I read a lot. I read different kinds of things. I read a lot of crime literature, of course. I read a lot of Latino literature. Lately, I think you're right. I've been attracted to younger, emerging voices. I just did an interview with a young writer, Kelly Ferrato Einstein, and what attracted me to her was simply she's writing about young Chicanas in the American West, as she puts it, and so she's reflective of her generation and is providing a voice for folks that don't always have that voice. So I was very intrigued with her stories and did an interview with her. And, you know, I believe that the definition of Chicana literature changes with every new publication. We continue to develop and grow and move forward. We're not stagnant, and so that's exciting. And we need to broadcast that.
All right. I think that's a perfect place to end this. Thanks so much for speaking with me today, Manuel. It's been a pleasure.
No, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Now, I understand you have a reading coming up.
I do. We're going to have a celebratory launch for My Bad at the Tattered Cover on Colfax on November 3rd at 7 o'clock. And for those of you who have attended those affairs before, you know that we like to have a party when we do it. So everybody come on out. We'll have a good time.
And with that, we'll wrap up our conversation with the godfather of Chicano noir, Manuel Ramos, about his new book, My Bad. I'm Paul Caroli. Stay tuned for more from KGNU, Denver and Boulder.